You are listening to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. Jackie Sibley's Drury's new play, Fairview, begins to unfold as a conventional family drama. The clan gathers to celebrate the matriarch's birthday. But audiences, beware. You are about to be kidnapped and taken on an unexpected, hilarious, and at times harrowing journey through the American conventions of storytelling, race, and perspective. Fairview is playing at the Soho Rep on 46 Walker Street until July 8th. The play is directed by Sarah Benson, who is also the artistic director of Soho Rep. She and Jackie Sibley's Drury are here in studio with me. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so this is a play in three sections.
Yes.
or acts. And as is my wont, I usually give stuff away, but I'm not going to give anything away. I don't want to give away too much. But do you see the play as a progression?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it starts off in a sort of conventional way where we're presented with a set that looks like a living dining room in an upper middle class family home, and you sort of settle into what feels like a nice traditional comedic drama about a nice traditional comedic family. And as the play goes on, you start to become aware of race and appropriation and sort of the politics outside of the family's home life and how that affects their home life.
Mm-hmm. Are these transitions meant to be abrupt, or are we supposed to be sort of, I don't know, lulled into a sense of security, and then we suddenly realize that we're being not corrupted, because that's a negative connotation, but the journey we thought we were on is something completely different?
I think it's fair to say that Act Two is sort of a radical shift in perspective on what we've previously been looking at theatrically, and, you know, both in terms of form and content.
Because Act Two is really a reenactment of Act One, right?
So
let's talk about Act One first, and then Act Two. Go ahead, Sarah.
So Act One, as Jackie sort of referenced, is, in the tradition of a family drama. It's psychological realism. There's a set that's representing reality. And it's very much in conversation with the tradition of the American family drama. Mm-hmm.
And then Act Two comes, and then, as you were saying, Sarah, it's a change in perspective. Jackie, talk about that change. What happens?
Well, you're sitting in the same seat in the same space, looking at the same set and the same actors, but you start to hear different voices that change the narrative that you've seen.
And the voices are not coming from the actors on the stage. It's coming basically voice of God.
Yeah. So the actors who are voicing the characters in Act Two are in the building, in the Soho Rep building, but they're not on stage. And so they're sort of watching the play with the audience, I think it's fair to say. And it becomes clear from listening to those voices that that they're white people. And as it goes on, you know, that a conversation evolves that is a conversation about race that would not happen if there were people of color in the room. So it's a very non-awesome conversation about race that's going to happen.
And in this conversation about race that is happening, where these disembodied voices, because you don't see who's having this conversation, this is all happening while Act One is being done over again on the stage.
That's correct.
And this conversation is, so if you could pick your race, which one would you be? And the conversation back and forth, it's super uncomfortable. Some want to answer, some don't want to answer. The folks who do answer have wild generalizations about people. Jackie, what are you trying to accomplish in that dialogue?
Well, I it's a slightly heightened version of a conversation that I feel like I've heard before, where there's something about white dominance that makes people who have that identity feel really comfortable describing other people to themselves. And they feel really comfortable having a lot of knowledge about races that they aren't and what that experience would be like. There's and so I feel like that comfort and that feeling of expertise is really harmful to everyone else, to be constantly described by someone who doesn't know who you are.
And I think, Sarah, you just mentioned all of the people who are talking about race or what race they are in the second act. They are white. And there's a particular conversation going on where the person says, well, I would want to be Asian, and then goes into these really like broad generalizations about what that's like. You know, in the first act, you play the classic R&B song Family Affair. I mean, it's like the bedrock of I don't know, the African-American community. You put that on, everyone will have a reaction. But it keeps getting interrupted by a very bad white band cover version. Is that a hint of what's to come?
Yeah, I think that our sound designer, Mikhail Suleiman, came up with this brilliant idea to basically, you know, there's a glitch that's described in the writing, and, you know, he sort of inserted like a musical glitch into that song, which is a white cover of that song. So it begins to kind of crack open the appropriation and the, you know, the assumption of narrative and on, you know, within the music. So it's sort of a way into the entire play.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jackie, as an African American and as a playwright, do you feel the white gaze imposing on your vision on how you go about writing your plays?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, it would be insincere to say that the majority of the theater going audience in New York City isn't white. Like, that's, even though that's
right,
something that a lot of theaters are working to change and working to do that in earnest ways, it's a reality of what it's like to write plays in this day and age. There, if you're having your plays presented in front of audiences, those audiences, unless they're at some very specific theaters, will be mostly white.
Mm-hmm. And so then what's the reaction to the play from these audiences to what can be a very uncomfortable conversation that they're hearing?
I think that they're excited to have the conversation. I mean, I think that we're all thinking about diversity and identity politics in really embodied ways. And so I think that there's discomfort and awkwardness, but there's also laughter, and there's also just like a desire to have an earnest, rigorous conversation. I feel like it's something that a lot of people are craving right now. And so it's the reactions have been really good.
Folks are craving an honest conversation about race.
Don't you think so?
Well, I mean, I'm curious. I guess maybe my reaction is that I'm surprised. I guess, yeah, people are craving an honest conversation, but we somehow can't seem to get there. Or is it that we can't get there in a very public fashion, but if it's just the three of us talking, it's maybe a much more accessible conversation. Maybe that's why people are attracted to this play and the message that it's having a conversation that they desperately want to have.
Yeah, and it's trying to describe things that we see every day. And it's describing it in a theatrical way rather than describing it with words.
And in terms of, because you were just mentioning a moment ago, Jackie, that, you know, it would be crazy to think, not to think that most theater-going audiences are white. But for African-Americans who see the play, Sarah or Jackie, what's been their reaction?
I feel like people have felt really seen and heard by the play. We've had some really personal reactions and emotional reactions that have really touched me personally, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting.
Is there one that stands out in particular?
I'm so bad at doing this.
it's okay. I mean, I can only imagine it, going back to what you just said with African Americans who've seen the play feeling like they've been seen and heard. when everything that you look at, you're just an observer as opposed to being someone that's a participant. You feel like you are a part of it. So I can understand someone being, you know, emotional in that sense, in terms of gratitude. My God, I see myself. Can we talk about the set for 1 second? Because it is, there's something on the set that you don't notice at first. It's a bit of a lip. Once you focus on it, it kind of looks like a frame. What are you getting at with that?
Well, I think Mimi Lien, who designed the set, you know, we were interested in having sort of a very present portal around the set that we can sort of play with how present that is in terms of how much it's drawing attention to people's watching of what's happening. So yeah, I think it's something that can be very invisible and kind of become part of the theatrical apparatus, or it's something that at certain times in the play we can really kind of highlight, which sort of, you know, amplifies the, you know, how much the play is dealing with how we look at things.
Well,
and
right.
Story.
Yeah, the stage then becomes a frame, and mm-hmm. in frames, things, images, scenery get stuck. And so are you playing with this image? Like, we're looking at this family in this frame, and then in comes the second act, and suddenly this frame is changed in a way.
Yeah, exactly. I think in the second act, the lighting also shifts radically, and so it, you know, you do become more aware of what you're looking at as like a series of images, also because you're not hearing the dialogue of the act one, but you're hearing mm-hmm. These act two characters speaking and sort of voicing, you know, a narrative.
And then in addition to the frame, there's the fourth wall, which is a mirror. What's the purpose of that?
I mean, I think it begins in Act One as a reference to, you know, something that happens a lot in naturalism, where the fourth wall is evoked very strongly, often by a character sort of looking at the audience, but as though they're looking in a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's something ultimately that we, you know, that we kind of crack open, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, Jackie, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, there is one thing here. I couldn't help but think of this joke that Roseanne got in trouble for telling on her show, not the Twitter thing, but the one in her show where Dan says he slept through the ethnic sitcoms, and Roseanne says, "They're just like us. No, you're all caught up." Is this second section a comment on that kind of attitude, do you think?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I actually haven't seen the Roseanne reboot, but I think that from like looking at like Twitter and stuff, it seems like the joke was offensive because it was just so dismissive of all of the progress that people have been trying to make and being seen and represented in media, and also that it was preposterous to think that other people could be relatable, could be an average middle class family. That's something that the broader American audience is able to empathize with, and I think that it's hard for me to relate this entire piece of theater to that one joke. But I don't think it's wrong to say that they're in conversation with each other in some ways.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope people come away with after they've seen the play?
I mean, a lot of things. I hope that they like enjoy the experience of seeing it. I feel like our cast is amazing. Mm-hmm. The designers have done an amazing job. And I also think that if people are open to it, they can have a wonderful experience that helps to change the way that they look at the world and at each other.
I've been speaking with director Sarah Benson and playwright Jackie Sibley's Drury discussing their new play, Fairview, now at the Soho Rep through July 8th. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you
Thanks
so much.
Thanks for having us.